Vov Elul, Monday the 12th of August, Rabbi Elchanan Goldblatt, a topical theme.
Birshus. On Shabbos we learned the psukim which say which people get conscripted into the army and which people are potter from the drafts. If we were in Eretz Yisrael, that really would be a topical theme. As it is, it's just the parasha that we learned last Shabbos. And the late in those psukim we find the following: the Yosefu Asher Trim Ledaber La'om, and the officers will continue to speak to the people. The Omaru, and they should say, Mi ho'ish hayorei v'rach ha'levav, who's the man who is frightened and tender of heart? Yeleich, let him go, v'yoshov l'veiso, let him return to his house, v'lo yimases levav echad ki levavo, and the hearts of his brothers should not be dissolved like his heart. Rashi quotes a machlokas tanoim from the Gemara in Soto, a machlokas Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Akiva says about the words, ish hayorei v'rach ha'levav, the man who's frightened, whose heart is soft, that the words are kipshutim. It simply means someone who's frightened. War is dangerous. People get hurt in war. People get killed in war. Who's the man who's frightened? Let him go home. Is kipshutim. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says not so. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says yorei means yorei me averus shabiyodo. It means someone who is frightened that he has committed averus. This is famous. Worth noting, by the way, as Rav Hirsch points out, that the Rambam paskins lahalochu lemaisa like Rabbi Akiva. The Rambam in Hilchus Melachim Perik Zay Halacha Tesvav says Isha Yorei V'rach Halevav Kumash Mo'o She'em V'libokach La'amod B'kishrei HaMilchama. It's someone who does not have the emotional strength to stand up to war. Anyway, I remember a Feldman once talking about this machlokas, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, about whether Yorei V'rach Halevav is kipshuto, like Rabbi Kiva says, and as the Rambam paskins, or whether, like Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, it means someone who is afraid of the averus which he's committed. And Rav Feldman said this machlokas is lishitosom in a separate machlokas in the Gemara Shabbos about whether yesh miso below chait or ein miso below chait. You'll find in Masechet Shabbos Daf Nun Hei a machlokas various amiroim about whether yesh miso below chait. It is simply the case that since the avera of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden, it is the fate of man to die. Varbo meisav v'itcho shel nochosh. Even if a man lives a life entirely free of all sin, nevertheless it comes to an end and he dies. Or is it the case that ein miso below chait, there is no death unless there's been sin? If a man lives a life entirely free of all averas, then like Elio Anovi, he won't die, he'll go up to heaven still alive. And I remember Rav Munk, Zichron Livracha, saying that for Pshat in Eliyahu. And Rav Feldman says that it says in the Sforim, and as far as I remember he didn't say which, he says, it says in the Sforim that this is the Machlukas, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Akiva holds, Yesh Misa below Chait. Even if you've never done anything wrong, ultimately every human being will die. And therefore, Hayorei V'rach HaLevov, the person who is afraid and his heart is soft, is frightened of war, is Kipshuta. Even if somebody has never committed any averas at all, Yesh Misa below Chait, he might die in war. Rabbi Yossi Aglili takes the other side of this machlokas. Rabbi Yossi Aglili holds ein misa below chait. If you've never done anything wrong, you're not going to die. So if you're going to war, there's nothing to be afraid of. The only thing that there is to be afraid of if ein misa below chait is the chait. Therefore, says Rabbi Yossi Aglili, ish hayorei v'rach ha'levov doesn't mean someone who's frightened kipshuto. If he's never done anything wrong, there's nothing at all to be frightened of. Hayorei v'rach ha'levov, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, must mean frightened of averus shebiyodo. If there were no averus shebiyodo, there would be nothing to be frightened of. And as I say, the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Akiva that it's kipshuto. That creates its own problems, which are not for now. If you look in the Sefer HaChinuch, the Sefer HaChinuch says like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and the Minchas Chinuch asks what the Sefer HaChinuch thinks he's doing, since his normal derech is to follow the Rambam, on this occasion he hasn't. Now, going back to the Pasuk concludes, V'lo yimases levav echov ki levovo, and the hearts of his brothers should not be dissolved like his, and on that there's a Ramban. The Ramban says, Asa'u ba'al alochus gedolus mitzvus lo sa'aseh. The Ba'al alochus gedolus says this is not just a piece of Musa, even if it were just a piece of Musa, it would be a Pasuk in the Torah, but he says it's a mitzvus lo sa'aseh, there is an issa deraisa of discouraging other people in war. And our Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Chaim Shulevitz, used to say that this is not just in war, and not just the milchemes mitzvah, whatever it might be. He used to say that this pasuk means that there is an issa of discouraging anyone from doing mitzvahs. If by my approach, my attitude, my feeling, my terror, the consequence is that the people around me are discouraged from performing a mitzvah, that is what the Torah means when it says, "V'lo yimases levav echov kilvavo." That is what it is that I'm not allowed to do. And he used to quote a number of instances. Two of them are from the stories of the Novi Elisha in the beginning of Melachim Beis. The first one goes like this. There was at that time, as people will know, the kingdom of Israel had been divided. It was divided in the time of Rehoboam, the son of Shlomo, into the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel with its capital in Shomron in Samaria, and the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Yehuda. And there was, at this time, a war of attrition taking place between Aram in the north, what is today Syria, and the kingdom of Israel. Again, a thoroughly topical sort of theme, if you please. And the king of Aram used to send marauding bands into Israel and suggest that they lie in ambush with a view to murdering any passing Jews whom they could find, what one might call terrorism. Now, Elisha, Beruach Kodesh, knew all about this, and whenever a marauding band from Aram came south into Israel, Elisha would send a message to the king of Israel at the time, I think it was Yehoram ben Ahab, saying, there's going to be an ambush in such and such a place, instruct the people not to go that way. And so the king did. And the king of Aram found this thoroughly frustrating. And he concluded there must be a spy in the court. So he called the court together and said, who's the spy? They said, there is no spy. The Jews have a Novi by the name of Elisha, and he just knows everything. And the king said, get him. And an army was sent to Doson, where Elisha was at the time living. And the army's instructions were to capture Elisha. And in the middle of the night, it says, in Melachim Beis, Perek Zayin, Posuk Tesvav, the servant of Elisha woke up. The servant in this story is not named. It's no longer Gehazi. We'll come to Gehazi later on. The servant got up, and he saw there was an army surrounding the city, horses, chariots, and his servant said to Elisha, Aho Adoni, Eicho Nase, Rebbe, what are we going to do? And Elisha said, don't be afraid. Our army is bigger than theirs. And Elisha davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is the first tefillah and the first nes that happens here, and he said to Hashem, Bekachno es Einov, open the young man's eyes that he should see. And Hashem opened the boy's eyes, and he saw, Vinei Ahor Mole Susim Verechev Eis Vivos Elisha, there were horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So Elisha had davened that the young man's eyes should be opened, and he saw a fiery horses and chariots around Elisha. The troop then comes down to capture Elisha, and Elisha davens again, and he asked Hashem to strike these people with Sanveirim. Sanveirim's interesting word. It only occurs, as far as I know here, and in the story of Lot. The conventional translation is blindness, which is wrong. If you look at the Rashi here, Rashi says it means confusion. It means someone who can see, but he doesn't understand what he's seeing. And if you think about that, think about the story of Lot. The people are struck with Sanveirim. They want to break into the house and murder the visiting Malachim. They're struck with Sanveirim. If they were struck blind, I would have thought they would give up, scream, or run for a doctor. They're struck with confusion. They don't know what they're doing. They go on trying to find the door. Likewise here, this army are not struck blind. They're struck with confusion. They just don't quite know what's going on. And Elisha said to them, you're in the wrong place, let me take you to the place you want to be and the man you want to be with. And he walked them down the road from Doson to Shomron, the capital of the northern kingdom. Then he davened for a third time, opened the eyes of these people, and suddenly they can see, and they're in the capital, surrounded by the entire army of the northern kingdom. The king said, Elisha, shall I kill them? And Elisha said, no, if you win a war, you're entitled to kill the people you've defeated. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through Nissim, puts people into your hands, you have no right whatsoever to do anything to them. So make a feast, give them lunch, and send them home. And that's what happened. By Yichro Keiro Gedolo, they were given lunch, they were sent home, and there was peace. Okay, let's go back earlier in the story. So the first thing Elisha did was that he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle, and the young man's eyes were opened, and he could see the chariots and horses of fire. What for? What for? Who needs it? That isn't what saved Elisha. It isn't even what saved the boy. What saved Elisha and saved the boy was the Sanhedrin, the fact that the army of Aram was struck with confusion, and when this man came to them and very helpfully said, you're in the wrong place, you're talking to the wrong people, let me take you where you want to go and walk them down the road to Shomron. That was what saved Elisha and the boy. Not the horses and chariots of fire, which did, as far as we can see, absolutely nothing. And not the miracle that the boy's eyes were opened. If his eyes hadn't been opened, what difference would that have made? There is a Radak. The Radak says, Hir olo ha-keil kain, God showed him this, l'chazek libo shalo yifchad, to strengthen his heart, he should not have biyore and have a rach leibov, he should have a leib chozok, so he shouldn't be afraid. But who needs that? So what Reb Chaim used to say was this, what we have here is an instance of the pasuk with which we began. Velo yimasis levav echov kilavovo. The boy was frightened. Acho adoni echo naaseh, Rabbi, what are we going to do? If the boy is frightened, there is a danger that that will have impact on the people around, which in this case means Elisha. And if Elisha is frightened, you won't get the second miracle either. If Elisha is in a condition of fear and of panic, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not send Sanhedrin to the troop who are there to capture him. So, it is necessary, as the Radak says, to have the first miracle to give the boy Chizuk Leiv, in order to prevent our posset from applying, in order not to have a situation of Yimas Levav Echov Kilvavo. People who are frightened are a danger to everybody around them. The Ramban says that the Baal Halachas Gedolus learns that it's a mitzvah's lo sa say that we are not permitted to discourage other people. The boy's panic would discourage Elisha and that would prevent the whole thing from happening. There's a second case, again with Elisha, which Reb Chaim believed instances below Yamas says Levavichov Kilavova. The Pasuk says, Vayelech Elisha Damosek. Elisha went to Damascus, which at the time was the capital of Aram. What did he go there for? So the Gemara says he went there, lachziro le Gehazi b'tshuva, to persuade his earlier servant, Gehazi, no longer with him, to do tshuva. What had happened to Gehazi? Gehazi had blotted his copybook in various ways. The psukim tell us that Gehazi, against the express wishes of Elisha, had taken presents from Naaman, the general whom Elisha had cured from his tzaraas. And there is a chazal which says, you remember the Shunammis had a child, and the child died, and the Shunammis ran to Elisha to try to do something about it. Elisha initially sent Gehazi to try and perform Tchias HaMeis, and then did it himself. Chazal say that Gehazi indecently assaulted the Shunammis during process. Okay, good. By Yigash Lehodfo, Lehod Yofyo, says the chazal. Anyway, so Elisha went to Damosek, and Chazal say, in order to get Gehazi to do tshuva, and Gehazi refused. Why did Gehazi refuse to do tshuva? Says the Gemara, it's a Gemara in Sota Daf Mem Zayin. Gehazi said to him, Kach mukubal ani mimcho, I have from you a Kabbalah, kol mi shechot vechti es harabim, may maspikim biod elas as tshuva, someone who is personally a chote, a sinner. Vehechti es harabim, and has caused the rabbim to do sin, ein maspikim biod elas as tshuva, he won't be able to do tshuva. So Gemara then says, what had Gehazi done wrong? What is the chait ve'echti esarabim? I've mentioned two things. I have mentioned the business with Naaman, that's certainly a chait, that he took presents from Naaman when Elisha did not want this to happen, and thereby frustrated the Kiddush Hashem of Elisha having cured Naaman, because now it looks as if Elisha is the sort of person who does things for money, and it looks corrupt, or whatever. That's a chait, but it's not machti esarabim. I've quoted the Chazal, which is not beferish in the Psukim, that Gehazi had groped the Shunamis. This is certainly a chait and a chilul Hashem and a terrible thing. It's not machti esarabim. And Gehazi, according to this Gemara, said, kol mi shechoto vechti esarabim. What did he do that was machti esarabim? So the Gemara has three theories. The Gemara's first theory is this. I mentioned that at this date we have two kingdoms. The northern kingdom was set up by Yerovam ben Nevat, who rebelled against Rehovam, the son of Shlomo. And Yerovam wanted his kingdom to be independent of the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Yehuda, whose capital was Yerushalayim. And it struck Yerovam as a bit of a problem if three times a year all the frum people in his kingdom were to go south to Yerushalayim to celebrate Yom Tov. This would give great status to the southern kingdom and Malchus Beis David and undermine him. So he set up Avodah Zorahs in a couple of places, in Don and in Beis El, with a view to the people of the northern kingdom serving those Avodah Zorahs rather than going to Yerushalayim for Yom Tov. So the Gemara has three theories about what it was that Gehazi had done that was chet vehechti yisarabim, which would prevent him from doing tshuva. Ikeda amre, some say, even shoeves tololo lechatis Yerovam ve'emido ben shamayin l'oretz, he discovered a means of causing the Avodah Zorah that Yerovam ben Nevat had created to be suspended in midair, ben shamayim l'oretz. So what was the consequence? People thought, you know, it really is a god. So that is clearly chote umachti as a rabbin. And one can understand that if he discovered and operated a means of causing the Avodah Zorah to look genuine, that would be chote umachti as a rabbin, mislead people, and Ema speaking biyodo lasus tshuva. But Igadon, there's a second theory. Now, one presumes, if the Gemara does, as it does here, produce three theories, that the second is at least as bad as the first, if not worse. And the third is at least as bad as the second, if not worse. What's the second theory? Ikeda amre shem chokak lo apuma, he engraved a shame on the mouth of this Avodah Zorah. Voisoi meres li Avodah Zorah said, Onochi and lo yielecha. So here you have this idol, this calf, which either is or isn't suspended in the air, but it announces loud and clear, Onochi Hashem Elokecha lo yielecha Elohim achirim al ponoi. One can see that is chote umachti esaram, that leads people into Avodah Zorah. And as I said, this is the second theory. Presumably it's at least as bad as the first theory that he suspended the Avodah Zorah, if not worse. There's a third theory. Ika da amra derazu sozu se rabbonon docha mikameh, he discouraged the Talmidim from attending Elisha's shir. Okay, now to stop people learning is chote umachti esarabim. But if we are right about the sequence in the Gemara, if the Gemara first says, Chote or Machti or Sarabim suspended the Avodah Zorah in midair, could be the same or even worse, Chote or Machti or Sarabim, he got the Avodah Zorah to say, Onochi v'lo yielecha. It could be, that's Chote or Machti or Sarabim. Thirdly, and it must be as bad, if not worse, discourage people from going to Shir. And how did he do that? How did he discourage people from attending Elisha's Shir? That's not in the Bavli, it's in the Yerushalmi. There is a Yerushalmi in the 10th Perek of Sanhedrin, which goes like this. Gehazi Odom Giba B'Torah Hoya. He was a great Talmud Chacham. And Ashoya Bo Shloshah Dvorim, Ayin Tzora, Poretz Be'er, V'lo Hoya Moda B'Tchiyas HaMesim. Ayin Tzora. B'Shah Shoya Elisha Yosef B'Tinuya, when Elisha was sitting learning, Gehazi would go and sit at the door. And the Talmidim would see that Gehazi, the great Talmud Chacham, doesn't think he can get anything from the Shir. So they wouldn't bother going in. Gehazi discouraged people from learning. He didn't actually say anything. He didn't say, go home at 8:30 in the morning, you got something better than do than gun to the Torah away. He just stood outside so they could see the Shir wasn't worthwhile. And this is the third theory in the Gemara about Choti Umachti Esarabim. It is, as Rukai used to learn, Velo Yemas Es Levav Echov Kilavovo. Other people were discouraged from performing a mitzvah by what he did. And he didn't actually do anything. It was no more than Gromo. No more than Gromo. But a Gromo which causes other people to be discouraged is called, according to Reb Chaim, Velo Yemas Es Levav Echov Kilavovo. And this is true even if it's unintentional. There's a Gemara in Yuma Daf Peivav. The Gemara asks, Hei Chidomi Chilul Hashem, can we know what Chilul Hashem is? And there are various examples given. And Rabbi Yochanan says, Kegon Ano, Demazgino, Dalad Amos, Beloi Toru, Beloi Tfilin. Rabbi Yochanan says, if I, Rabbi Yochanan, were to go four Amos without Toru, without Tfilin, that would be a Chilul Hashem. All right. I agree, it would be. But why should Rabbi Yochanan go Dalad Amos without Toru, without Tfilin? This is Rabbi Yochanan. Says Rashi, Va'ena kol yodin shenechlashti begir sossi. People will not understand that I'm completely exhausted. I've made myself ill with how much I learn. But a maidim in many lisbatl mitalmud Torah, they'll stop learning because they see that I'm not learning. Says Rav Yochanan, I'm not learning because I've learned so hard that I'm completely shattered and I can't. And it's still a chilul Hashem because other people will be thereby discouraged. Velo yimas, said Reb Chaim, es levav echov ki levavo. Okay, that is if we have negative impact on the people around us. What about people who go out of their way to try and have positive attitude on the people around them, on the tzibur as a whole, on the whole of Klal Yisrael? We are in Chodesh Elul, we're in the run-up to the Yom Ha'Nuroim. On the afternoon of Yom HaKippurim, we'll read Sefer Yonah. Everybody knows the story of Sefer Yonah. Hashem said to Yonah, go and tell Nineveh that the town will be overturned. Yonah did not want to do this. He went down, he got onto a ship going to Tarshish. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a storm. The sailors cast lots to find out why there was this storm, and the lots fell on Yonah. They asked him who he was and what he was. Ivri Onochi, Vashem, Elokei HaShemayim, and I serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so on. And against their wishes, they didn't want to do this, they threw him overboard, and the fish swallowed him. And eventually, Yonah davened inside the fish, was thrown out onto the dry land, and he went and did as he was told. Why did Yonah not do as he was told in the first place? So there is a Rashi on base. The Rashi is based on Midrashim, which are in two places that I know of. One is the Tanchuma towards the end of Parshas Vayikra, and the second is the Pirkei de Reb Lezer about Yom HaChamishi. And the Midrashim, which Rashi quotes in brief, say this. Why was it that Yonah didn't want to go? Yonah said, look, the Goyim are ready to do tshuva, and the Jews aren't. If I go to Nineveh and I tell them that the town will be overturned, Nineveh will do tshuva, we will make similar announcements to the Jews, and they won't do a thing, and that will be a kitrug, an accusation against Klal Yisrael. So what can I do? There is, after all, as we learnt in the parasha that we learned on Shabbos, an isser of a Novi being kovesh nevuah. So once he's had nevuah, he is not permitted to suppress it if he's been instructed to announce it. So Yonah said, I will go to a place where I am no longer a Novi. I will go to a place where the Shechino does not make Nevuah. And by going there, I won't have the problem of Kovash Nevuah, and I won't be able to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me, and there will be no Kitrog on Klal Yisrael, there will be no accusation against Bnei Yisrael, and everything will be fine. He fled to protect Klal Yisrael from an accusation. So he was setting out to try and do something good for the Tzibah, for Klal Yisrael. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a series of miracles. There's the storm. Then there's the fact that the storm stops when he's thrown overboard. Then there's the fact that he survives inside the fish, and that the fish takes him in the first place. And he stayed there in that fish, by the way, according to Rashi, until it became absolutely unbearable. Those who are interested in Dikduk will have noticed that in the first couple of occasions it's a dog, which is the masculine word. And at the tefillah of Yonah, when Yonah davens to be saved, it says, Vayispalel mitoch hadogo, which sounds feminine. And Rashi says, Zocho hoya, this is the second perek, Rashi says, it was a male, and there was space for him. So he didn't daven to get out of that. I mean, it was unbearable, but there was space. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu got the male fish to spit him out into a female fish that was exceedingly pregnant, and with all the little fish in there, there was no room for Yonah, became absolutely unbearable. That's why it changes from dog to dog off, from a male to a female fish. That stage he davened. He went on staying in the fish, trying to avoid bringing the Kitrug and Klal Yisrael. It was completely unbearable. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu bother? Yonah doesn't want to do it. Okay. So Yonah, despite being a Novi, doesn't want to perform the Shlichus Hashem. Get a different Shliach. Get a Novi who's prepared to do what he's told. So Reb Chaim said this. He said, the fact that Yonah is Mavater on the Madregus which he had attained, the fact that Yonah, for the sake of Klal Yisrael and protecting Klal Yisrael, is prepared to cease being a Novi, and to go through everything he went through, and to stay at least in the male fish until Bo Mayim Adnofish, until it was completely impossible, this raises him enormously. This raises his Madrega. It makes him an even greater person. For all the reasons why he was a Novi in the first place, they still apply. And more than that, he's become a greater man. Because someone who acts for the sake of the Tzibur is enormously increased, enhanced, and made greater by and through that. There is a pasuk in Daniel, Perek Yud Beis, pasuk Gimel. The conclusion of the pasuk is Matzdikei horabim kechochovim laolam voed. People who matzdik horabim, people who give tzchus to the kehillah as a whole, they're like stars. And they're not just like stars, but l'olam voed. L'olam voed means infinite. They're like stars forever. Why? Let me ask you two more questions before we answer that. Why are people who are matzdik the rabbim, as Yonah was, like stars, l'olam voed? People are doing the reverse of lo yimasses l'vavichov kilvavo. People who are improving the tzibur rather than discouraging it. Now, second question. Yaakov Avinu bought the Bechorah from Esav for a nezid al doshim, for a pot of soup, lentil soup. There is, as we all know, an Isser Onor. The Isser Onor says, I am not allowed to give the wrong price. If the value of this sefer is £12, I may not pay you £10 for it. And if I pay you less than £10 for it, the mekach is bottle. The Bechorah surely is infinite in value. How could Yaakov have bought it for a nezid adoshim? And if he did buy it for a nezid adoshim, how can it be that the sale was valid? It's surely the Isser Onor. Third question. In a few weeks' time, a couple of weeks ago, read a pasuk which says, "Umeshalem lesona of el ponov lahaavido lo yachel lesona o el ponov leshalem lo," which means, says Rashi, that if a rasha does mitzvahs, he is paid his schar ba'olam hazeh, in this world. There's a slight difficulty with that, which is the opinion of Rabbi Yaakov in the Gemara in Kiddushin, which is schar mitzvah b'hai al maleka. There is no reward for mitzvahs in this world, so how can Rishoyim be rewarded for mitzvahs in this world? So Reb Chaim said a quite extraordinary chiddush, which is this. Reb Chaim said that if I own a mitzvah, it's my mitzvah only, then the value of that mitzvah is the value which I set on it. If, for example, in the middle of a shiur, I turn aside to go and find out the score in the test match, what I'm saying is that the shiur is, in my view, worth just a little bit less than the score in the test match. If, to take a more serious instance, somebody under enormous pressure decides that he really will work on Shabbos because that way he will make X hundred thousand pounds, he has decided that the value of a Shabbos is X hundred thousand pounds minus one. The value of a mitzvah, which is just my mitzvah, is the value which I set on it. Says the pasuk, Vayivez Esoves HaBechorah, Esov despised the Bechorah. Esav said the Bechorah is worth one pot of soup. It's Esav's mitzvah. If that's the value which he sets, that's what it's worth, and it's not onur. Umeshalem lasona of el ponov lahaavido, Rishoyim gets schar mitzvah ba'olam hazeh, even though schar mitzvah ba'hai al maleka, because if the Rasha thinks that that's what his mitzvah is worth, that's what it's worth. But this, of course, is only true where it's my mitzvah. But if it's a mitzvah which is matzdike harabim, which is having impact on everybody else, it's not my mitzvah for me to set the value. And consequently, matzdike harabim kekochovim, they're like stars, le'olam voed, forever and ever, which is infinite, because the value of a mitzvah which does not belong to me but has impact on the whole of Klal Yisrael, like Yonah protecting the whole of Klal Yisrael from Kitrug, the value of that mitzvah is infinite. It's not the value that I set, it's not the value to me, it's the value to all of them. Hashem Ori V'Yishi, Ori Barosh Hashanah V'Yishi V'Yom HaKippurim. We've talked about V'lo Yimasis Levav Echov Kilevovo, about how we may not, must not discourage other people from any mitzvah. We've talked about the impact of Matzdike Horabim and of Yonah and of doing positive things to the Tzibur. The Rambam in Hilchus Tshuva quotes the famous Gemara in Kiddushin, which says that one should regard the world as evenly balanced. One more Aveira and we've all had it. One more mitzvah and everybody will be fine. Let us hope that we will all of us be zocher over this period and further to perform so many mitzvahs of such quality that everything for us, Klal Yisrael, and the whole world will be fine. Thank you.